Hello, this is a re-recording of a talk originally given in December of 2007 to the Gay and Lesbian Sangha. It meets Monday nights in San Francisco, and it's on causes and conditions in daily life. Well, vacation, which I have just enjoyed, is generally a time to get away from our usual conditions. And the things that so often cause us to be unhappy, or we imagine so, are to be left behind. Unfortunately, I found recently that causes and conditions are always responsible for whatever arises in each moment. And actually, that's not unfortunate at all. It's funny that I should hold that opinion. In general, in Buddhism, we're taught that our big mistake in living is that we take as self, as personal, the bundle of experiences that we witness. The Buddha taught that the stuff we witness, or perhaps I should say that consciousness witnesses, are actually due to causes and conditions. This is one of the first things that the Buddha pondered upon his awakening. Here is one of the classic suttas on the subject, which explains that all things arising are caused by and conditional upon something that comes before it. It's called the Bodhisutta. I have heard that on one occasion, when the Blessed One was newly awakened, sitting in the shade of the Bodhi tree, the tree of awakening, he sat in the shade of the Bodhi tree for 7 days in one session, sensitive to the bliss of release. And at the end of 7 days, after emerging from that concentration, he gave close attention to dependent co-arising in forward order, thus. When this is, that is. From the arising of this comes the arising of that. In other words, now he here goes through he elucidates the cycle of dependent origination. From ignorance, as a requisite condition, comes fabrications. Those are also known as karmic energy. From fabrications, as a requisite condition, comes consciousness. From consciousness, as a requisite condition, comes name and form. And then so we go as follows. From name and form comes the six senses. From the six senses come contact, i.e. contact with an object of sensory perception. From contact, as a requisite condition, comes feeling, and that is good, neutral, or bad feeling in reaction to that contact. From feeling, as a requisite condition, comes craving. From craving comes clinging, or sustenance, wanting more, or pushing away the experience. From clinging comes becoming, which is embodying a position in relationship to the thing or other that's being clung to. From becoming, as a requisite condition, comes birth. From birth, then old age, death, sorrow, lamentation, pain, distress, and despair all come into play. Such is the origin of this entire mass of suffering. Then, on realizing the significance of that, the Blessed One on that occasion exclaimed, "As phenomena grow clear to the Brahman, ardent, absorbed, his doubts all vanish when he discerns what has a cause." In another sutta, the Buddha described the certainty of causes and conditions bringing everything about. So he described it this way, clearly as a law of nature. He was pretty clear on this. This is the Discourse on Supporting Conditions from the Samyutta Nikaya. "Just, monk, when the rain falls heavily upon some mountaintop, the water flows down along with the slope and fills the clefts, gullies, and creeks. These being filled full, these fill up the pond. These being filled up, fill up the streams. These being filled up, fill up the rivers. And the rivers being filled up, fill up the great ocean. In the same way, monks, ignorance is the supporting condition for karma formations. Karma formations are the supporting condition for consciousness. Consciousness is the supporting condition for mentality, materiality. Mentality, materiality is the," and on he goes through the 12 that I've already listed. But he clearly relates it to the flowing of water down a mountain, so that there's no escaping it coming. One conditions the next, conditions the next, conditions the next. So now you may perceive that the Buddha was very clear that all things caused by the conditions that precede them. There isn't really much self going on here. I had an experience on my vacation that was enough out of my ordinary experience day to day to help me see this much more clearly. Causes and conditions not only bring about the arising of events, but they bring about mental arisings as well. They create the lens through which we perceive the world around us. So even my sense of what kind of environment I'm in is determined by what has come before. So, my vacation. It was a lovely time. We arrive on Molokai in this particular case. I visited a couple islands, but in this case on Molokai. And we receive a rental car and a convertible. It's never happened before. You always think, oh, great, you know, if only one day I could get a convertible. It was a lovely surprise. It was a beautiful weather and a lovely surprise. I even joked to the counter person that now I had to drive to the strip and pick up chicks to fit the convertible. Her facial expression told me that she totally missed the joke. But in any case, we leave the airport in our newfound treasure, top down, and soon there's a police car following us. We're driving 45 down a long hill, and it really felt like a speed trap. After a while, the police car turns right off behind us and then very quickly shows up again on the road. And it really did. I mean, it was pretty clear that a speed trap was going on. So kind of noticed that, moved on, thinking not too much more of it. We stopped at a beautiful shoreline and walked out onto the rocks. Two guys drive up in a little bit of a beat-up pickup truck, and they ask if we're thinking about buying property. It clearly wasn't a friendly inquiry. It was really more of a challenge. Then the on and off exchange that followed included statements from these two that stolen land is not for sale and that we should accept their friendly advice and not try to buy land on Molokai. Now, I know that everyone is just trying to be happy and that acts that seem unskillful are nevertheless attempts to obtain happiness. Unfortunately, at that moment, I wasn't able to muster this wisdom. And instead, what arose was fear and really a bit of indignation that I, this nice guy, was being treated that way. So also actually did a little bit of guilt on my part, because seeing how beautiful this place was, of course I was thinking in my mind how lovely it would be to have land there. Yet I assured our hosts, let's call them, that I wasn't interested and couldn't afford it anyway, which is absolutely true. And to make it all the more confusing for a gay man from San Francisco, one of the guys was really cute. So did you ever notice about that, someone being hostile to you? It's really kind of emotionally confusing. But in any case, on goes day one of our vacation. I definitely took this all personally about kind of my sense of unwelcome in this place. We drove to our rental cabin. At that point, we actually weren't sure we wanted to go out at all. We kind of thought we didn't want to go out. We decided a lower profile was clearly required, and we agreed to return the convertible. The one time I get a convertible, a freebie as a rental, and after 3 hours, it's time to return it. So anyway, oh well. So that afternoon, we attended the gathering of another spiritual tradition, and we happened to discuss our experience. As it turns out, only Molokai immigrants are at this gathering, and there is a great deal of sympathy for our experience. Our lens of being unwelcome is reinforced. Our beliefs of self, nice self, coming to an unwelcoming place are totally reinforced. Others share stories with us told through a similar lens. One of these stories is from a guy who says he'd been visiting this island for 20 years, and only quite recently did the staff at the local bakery serve him. Every time previously, they'd always serve locals instead of him when it was busy. And he really got he noticed. On our way home from this, we go to a small grocery store, and we come up with the items and buy them. And then we're told that there are no bags available. So I totally take this as another indication that we are not welcome. So clearly you get what's happening here. As events unfold, I'm using the events to form a preconception that I use to filter all of my experiences through. Now, we later debated about whether we should even go into the bakery, pretty sure that we wouldn't be served, which turned out not to be the case. might I tell the end of the story too soon? So here we are. We're going around feeling pretty sure that we're unwelcome on Molokai'i because we're well off enough to be driving a convertible, which we didn't pay for. And, you know, truth to tell, being unwelcome because we were gay didn't even enter our minds. And I actually don't think it was at play very much. Well, it could have been, but not sure. But certainly, as gay men, as lesbian and gay people, we have a long time experience of this happening, of people looking at us and deciding that we're different and not worthy of their friendly attention. So this, I just want to also be clear, this is not some kind of emotional oversensitivity. There's a whole center of our brains that is all about recognizing patterns. When we encounter similar circumstances in the future, we compare our sensory input and we try to fit that input into past patterns. It's just something we do. It's how we make sense of the world. That is how we know when danger is arising. If a bobcat attacked me once before, it doesn't take long to establish a pattern in my brain's neurons firing that a bobcat equals danger. So this brain-based pattern recognition system, it's a great asset. And at the same time, it has some liabilities. Sometimes we see patterns when we're not there, because that tends to be the lens through which we form our recognition of the world around us. Now, I have an exercise that I'd like you to do. After I explain the assignment, I want you to pair up with someone you don't know very well. I'd like you to think of a time when you were welcomed into a group or admired or, okay, even hit on, and you later discovered that you actually didn't like the reason you were welcomed or admired. You probably felt a bit disappointed or as if your admirer was disingenuous. Now, I'll tell a little story. This happened to me once. I was actually at the Gay Games in Amsterdam, and this very handsome Spanish guy walked up to me and started chatting me up. And at some point, he made it clear that, you know, I was this kind of blondish gay guy from San Francisco, had a big mustache, and that is that's what he found attractive about me, and that's why he was speaking with me. And I kept going back to him and saying, oh, you know, I don't remember the word for mustache, but I said, you know, mi corazón, you know, like, what about my heart? Don't you see the rest of me? And he kept saying, nope, you know, this is all about physical typing here. And I was a little hurt. I mean, obviously one can have different reasons for being at the Gay Games, and apparently as much as I thought it was, picking up a guy from Spain on the street wasn't actually what was going to be good for me at the time. So you can see he had a much different agenda, and it didn't work out. I really enjoyed the attention. Then all of a sudden I figured it out, and it wasn't pleasant. So that's the exercise I invite you to do, or shall I say that I invited the group when this talk was given live. So you might want to turn off your listening device at the moment and think of a time when that was true for you, and then come back. So, I'd like to go back to my Molokai story now. We certainly had some more experiences that we perceived as unwelcoming. And now, mind you, our lens was polished up for that to happen. And I think it makes it easier for that to happen. But I'll stop here for the sake of time. As our visit progressed, including the time after we left Molokai, here are some things we learned. That the community on Molokai had just defeated by voting a very contentious development proposal that would have built over 200 luxury homes. The corporate-owned block of land that the homes were to be built on includes over half of the private land on the entire island. The land includes sacred sites that Native Hawaiians had long been denied access to. The people who visit the existing resort on that large block of land are almost all white and wealthy and have comparatively little contact with the rest of the people on the island. That block of land had been annexed by the old Hawaiian royal family, donated to a trust upon the dissolution of the monarchy, I should say when the monarchy was deposed, and then sold off to a corporation. The view across the entire east side of Molokai is of several ugly clusters of hotels and developments on Maui, thus being a portender of the future for Molokai, perhaps. And Molokai is known as the last bit of old Hawaii, And off-islanders who want a piece of it are increasingly shopping there for land. Now, if I'd known all of that before I went, I'd probably be the guy who was discouraging rich guys in their convertible from buying land. But this really wasn't about me at all. It was all about all of these causes and conditions that I've just described to you, about the situation that we walked into, all those causes and conditions that preceded our visit. I took the interaction I had, and I made a story that was about me. Fear and indignity arose. That shaped my entire experience in a negative way for days. I repeatedly reinforced that point of view. You know what? Often people don't give out shopping bags on Molokai. They're kind of ahead of the practice of bringing your own bag. And so that interaction wasn't about me. I just didn't understand what was happening there at that moment, and I perceived it in a certain way. Only later did I put together all of this information for a fuller explanation of what happened, and then was able to depersonalize what I'd walked into. So here's another exercise for you to do. I'd like you to think of a time when you were shunned by a group or dissed by someone. I'd like you to make up a set of causes and conditions that brought this about. It might be something like, well, she was a lesbian herself and not out yet, and she was really terrified, so she rejected me rudely. An acquaintance in Hawaii just told me a story about an interaction he had with a famous monk, Ajahn Sumedho. He was telling the Ajahn how infatuated he was with his new girlfriend. He expected some wisdom about impermanence to come from this great teacher, but instead the Ajahn responded, "It's amazing that we take attraction so personally." I thought that was just great. So, again, turn off your listening device for a moment and think about that time when you were treated badly, and then concoct a story about what causes and conditions might have brought that about. Thank you. So, as you might have deduced by now, the point of all this is, even when it's all about us, and it's always all about us, it's not at all about us. It's about whatever came before us. Everything I am and everything I witness is made up of what came before. So there's just no need to take it all so personally. In fact, if you'd like to just kind of take a breath at the moment, think about this present moment that you're in. Dwell in it for a moment. Look around at where you are. Think about the astonishing complexity of events that it took to create this present moment that we're all sitting in. The wonder of that just might bring yourself to touch emptiness itself. Thank you very much.